This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Each week at this time, we take a look at the people, places, and events that make Wisconsin unique.
Today, we focus in on Wisconsin's role in the civil rights movement, past and present. Peggy Rosga joins us. She's a professor emerita at UW-Waukesha and a longtime civil rights activist. She'll be leading a UW-Waukesha Freedom Ride tour of key civil rights locations from Memphis to Washington, D.C. on the 50th anniversary of the Freedom March next summer. Peggy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's turn back to the 1960s. What led a young woman from Wisconsin to join the Freedom Summer Campaign in the South?
Well, I had been watching TV news demonstrations, civil rights demonstrations, and had a growing feeling that I wanted to do something, that this was not what I thought the United States was all about. The idea that people were prevented from voting just struck me as being un-American. And gradually, the cumulative effect of watching things, I can remember as far back as Eisenhower sending troops to help the students get into Little Rock High School. But the events of the summer of 1964 really propelled me into looking for an opportunity to be more actively involved. And so the next summer, in 1965, I joined a Southern Christian Leadership voter registration campaign. There was a group of us, about eight of us from Milwaukee, who went, and we were in Bullock County, Alabama, about 50 miles southeast of Montgomery. It changed my life.
What were your first impressions being there and working and not watching it from a distance?
It was scary. We got to our county and went to visit one of the local leaders who had invited us there. He owned a TV repair shop just off the main street of Union Springs, Alabama. He walked us up to the main street after we were done talking, and we watched the trucks go by with the rifles in the rack behind the driver in a pickup truck. He said, "See those rifles? After you've been here a week, they won't be in those racks anymore. They'll be on the seat beside the driver." And that proved to be correct.
And you faced threats from those rifles as you did your work?
Well, nobody ever held a rifle up to me. But the climate of intimidation was certainly there. We would have mass meetings in the evening almost every night at a African-American church, and then drive from the meeting to the house where we were staying, which was out in the country. And we had to go through a small town, Midway. Teenagers hung out at an abandoned building in Midway, and when we'd drive past, they'd get in their car and follow us. And the rule was that you never let anybody pass you on the highway. So I was driving a 59 Chevy that my dad had bought and sent down for us to use because we were in need of a vehicle at as fast as it would go, which was like 75 miles an hour. And I'd count the curves in the road, one, two, three. At the third curve, I knew I had to slam on the brakes and turn into the driveway of the house where we were staying. So that was the kind of scary that we dealt with. Maybe the teenagers were just bored and looking for some excitement and wouldn't have done us any harm. But we didn't know that. And they never bothered us once we were at the Daniels house where we lived.
But there were stories, of course, where it wasn't just bored teenagers following people around all over the South.
Right. Well, the reason for the rule for civil rights workers to not let anybody pass you on the highway at night was that was how Viola Liuzzo was killed after the Selma to Montgomery march. She was driving people back to Selma from Montgomery and forced off the road by a car who was passing her on the highway at night.
That's the I guess, dark side of being down there. But was it exhilarating at the same time to be participating in this movement?
Well, it was seeing people register to vote. At the time we were in Bullock County, there were two registration days a month. We worked for the first 3 weeks we were there to encourage people to go on the first registration day. 41 people were actually showed up. We were disappointed. We thought we'd have bigger numbers, but all the local leaders were thrilled. They had never had a turnout like that. There's a lot of harassment in the registration line. They ran out of applications and had to send for more. They went out for a two-hour lunch. They criticized people for not standing properly in line. A lot of that kind of petty harassment. But gradually, people were registered to vote, and to see how thrilled they were and to know that things were changing. And then actually by the next spring, that summer, the Voting Rights Act was passed, and it made a huge difference. There weren't any federal registrars in our county, but people knew they were in the state, and it made a huge difference in facilitating getting people registered. And by the next spring, in the primary elections for local offices, African Americans actually came out on top in the primary. I don't think they won the general election, but this was a remarkable, visible change, and that was so immensely gratifying.
As you mentioned, this was a life-changing experience for you. What are your thoughts on going on this tour, this Freedom Ride tour of the South now, a half century later?
Well, this is not the first time that I will have been back in the South. I went with my daughter. One of the options for a course she was taking was to do a civil rights tour of the South, not a group tour, an independent tour. So we did that together. And I went with a friend once, and I've been to conferences in the South. Actually, at the 40th anniversary of Freedom Summer in 2004, she and I went together to a conference in Jackson, and then went from there to Philadelphia, Mississippi, where James Cheney, Michael Schwerner, and Andrew Goodman were killed. So I've been there before. Actually, the first time I went back, all my old fears paralyzed me. I wouldn't get out of the car. I wouldn't drive down country roads. It was silly, of course. But, this is 40 years later, and who knew that I had anything to do with the civil rights movement, so many years ago. But all those old fears crept up. I've gotten over that since then, and it is really interesting. I think it'll be a valuable educational experience for the students, both to be reading about the history and talking about the history, and then seeing those sites and having opportunities to talk to people today and see what the situation is, and begin to talk about what changed and why, and what still needs to change. And how. So I'm so thrilled about doing this tour. I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you worry that we think of the civil rights movement as a history? It's part of our history, but not alive in our present?
I do. Of course, I've been talking a lot about Milwaukee civil rights for the past half dozen or so years to school groups and community groups. When I came back from the South, of course, I felt I would be a hypocrite if I was only interested in Southern civil rights issues and didn't see what was going on in my own city. And coming back from the South, I saw in a way I hadn't seen before. For one thing, I had African-American friends, and it was inconvenient to get together with them. It was three transfers on the bus to get from where I was living to where they were living. And so I began to ask questions about what was going on here. But yeah, Patrick Jones, the historian who wrote the book on Milwaukee civil rights, Selma of the North, says that if you study the Southern civil rights movement, you might see it as a finished story. Legislation was passed successfully. If you look at the civil rights movement nationally and in the North, then you see it's an unfinished story. I think it's an unfinished story, South and North.
What do you think the civil rights movement should be doing now to try to finish that story, or at least advance it here in Milwaukee and nationwide?
Well, I am particularly disheartened by attempts to restrict voting because that's how I came into the movement. And I thought that was all settled, that there were laws to protect voting rights. But the new assault on voting rights, voter suppression, disturbs me greatly, and I think that has to be a number one priority. No, you cannot restrict anybody's right to vote. No, we're not going back there.
And if you had lessons to draw from your activism in the 60s and since in the South and back in Milwaukee, and had advice for younger activists tackling this or other issues, what would be your words of inspiration for them?
Well, for me, going south as a 19-year-old in 1965 and a 20-year-old in 1966 was inspiration to see people risking everything to stand up for their civil rights was tremendously inspiring. And I think going to visit those shrines in the South can serve the same purpose for young people and older people. Today, one of the really strong points about this tour is that we hope that it will be multi-generational and you know, get some interesting dialogue going. There's a lot of energy for civil rights, for social justice, for racial justice across the country today. We need to make connections between people who are concerned so they don't feel like they're in this isolated pocket, that they see the national picture and see where their allies are in various places across the country. Actually, while I was still teaching full-time at UW-Waukesha, I was tremendously impressed by a lot of my students and how they had already come to view the civil rights actions of the past as their own model, their own.
Peggy, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you to Peggy Rozga, civil rights activist. We've got a link to info about that UW-Waukesha Freedom Ride Tour posted on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.